Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Red, White, and Rude. I'm your host, William Del Pilar, bringing you the unfiltered truth where culture, pop culture, and entertainment collide with politics. Not every time, but this week it most definitely does. Today we have a special guest as we are going to talk the Oscars. Now to me, the Oscars aren't worth a damn, but she loves them, and so I'm going to give her a chance to express her views. And don't worry, I'm not going to come at her like Michael Myers did to Jamie Lee Curtis in Halloween, which is a classic that was nominated for nothing in its time. And then we're going to move to the mysterious death of Gene Hackman, the Hollywood titan who conquers screens and, believe it or not, his doubters as well. Found dead at 95 with his wife in Santa Fe. Then we're exposing Hollywood's latest virtue signal, teary-eyed celebs fawning over Ukraine's Zelensky while ignoring his dictatorial vibes. Plus, we've got the rude rundown from Michael Caine's hypocrisy to Disney's woke flops. Turn up the volume, people. It's going to be a rude ride. And before I bring my guest on, do not forget to bookmark grumblingsmedia.com and check out our work like this podcast at YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, ePandora under the handle Grumblings Media. So let me welcome you, my guest, who, if you follow me on my conservative politics, which I'm sure all of you do, you will recognize her as the wonderful, beautiful Miss Annette Ross. Hey, Annette, how you doing?
Hey, ready to talk about my equivalent of the Super Bowl?
You know, I was reading an article because when I decided, okay, I'm going to do some Oscar stuff and I'll ask Annette to come on. They call it the gay Super Bowl.
Stop it.
This is like the gay Super Bowl. They were talking about even the gays are abandoning the Oscars for the Super Bowl itself, you know, because the Super Bowl had 110 million viewers. Now, which brings up an issue. We're going to get right into this, but let me preface this with the fact that the Oscars should be growing. It is America's Hollywood Super Bowl. Nobody doubts that. We were just making a joke about it, but it was always a titan of televised events. Everybody wanted to know, hey, the Poseidon, the 1972, a film as a kid I fell in love with. You know, I rooted for Shelley Winters in that underwater scene. You know,
Rocky.
Go, Shelley, go.
Rocky, he won in 1976, yeah.
Believe it or not, Rocky kind of went over my head. I didn't even know it came out until I was in my music class and somebody put up a score and we were playing. I thought it was pretty good. Hey, you checked out the movie yet? It was Rocky.
Well, you know what? It was a big year because it beat out Network, and that was supposed to be like the favorite, and Rocky beat it. I remember that I watched the Oscars and I was only like 10 years old and I was in tears. That's how excited I was. Seriously.
We're dating ourselves because Rocky, I think, was 75. Yeah, you know? But so my point is, this is one of America's cultural events,
yeah,
deep in our history. Yet it's like this, unlike the Super Bowl, which has gone up in ratings, the Oscars have not been the same. So let's get right into that, Annette. I sent you the note so you can follow along for the audience. In 1980, I just picked out a year and I started at 10 years. You know, okay. 1980, about 49 million viewers. Kramer versus Kramer had the high viewership of the era. 1990. Well, actually, so 1980 was the 52nd Oscars. 1990, the 62nd, 40 million. So we've gone from 49 to 40 million.
Yep.
Driving Miss Daisy, which I never saw. I won't bother to see. It's just I'm not into a boring film like that. Anyway, but I'm in the minority because it made a lot of money. 2046.5 million, a tick back up. American Beauty, that's more of an infamous movie. I saw that. You know, it was enjoyable. That opening scene
that was dark. Dark. I love it.
There you go. That's the first time I saw that actress. She went on to do quite a few other movies. She's kind of poor women. Women in Hollywood have a shelf life, you know, so you don't see her too much.
Annette Bening?
No. She played the wife of Kevin Spacey in that movie, the one who played the daughter, the blonde-haired girl.
Yeah, you don't see her, though. Right. No. That's interesting. But she was good.
Right. Even Annette Bening's not around. And why? And the only reason Annette Bening stuck around was because she's Mrs. Warren Beatty, you know. But that's not fair to women. Women, again, you know, they have a shelf life more so. Men age with, like, fine wine in Hollywood, where women are discarded. It's just that tale, you know. Okay, then in 2010, the 82nd Oscars with The Hurt Locker, a little bit of a macho film there with a woman's touch. Yeah. 42 million people watched it. 2020, 92nd Oscars, 24 million watched it. That was literally half in a 10-year span. It almost lost half its audience. Parasite was a big winner, and I believe Parasite was an indie film. You know, so
did you watch it?
No. I did not.
You would have found it fascinating. It's a bloodbath. I mean, you should watch it sometimes. It's actually very interesting. Go ahead. Next.
Okay. So I started going year by year here. And again, it was I want to stress this. It was an indie movie, had nothing to do with Hollywood. You know, then not 2021, 93rd, it was delayed by COVID-19, hit a record low of 10 million. Now, I find that odd because Netflix had record subscribers. It's like everything on television was booming because we were locked inside, yet it only had 10 million. So I have no clue why, and I should have, maybe another day I'll research that out. 2022, it jumps back up to 17 million. Coda winning, have no clue what that is.
Oh, come on. That's a movie about the deaf community, really. I mean, I don't think that's why it won, but this daughter who is a musician and her parents are deaf. I mean,
that's why I didn't hear about it.
Marley Matlin is the mom, plays the mom.
You know, Marley Matlin, she's like Denzel Washington. I always tell people there are more black actors than just Denzel Washington. When it comes to deaf people, that's the only name you ever see.
It's her, yeah. She's the go-to, I mean, it's a beautiful film. Go ahead.
Gotcha, okay. And 2023, it had a bump. It went from 17 to about 19 million. Everything Everywhere All at Once won. Never heard of that one either. 2024.
We need to get to the
movies. What's that?
You need to get to the movies. Stop watching your Indian films.
No, I think Hollywood's kind of missed the boat, and that's one reason we're having these lower ratings.
Okay.
And I'm not talking about people's taste. Well, I am talking about people's taste. Let's finish this, and then I'll give you an important point. And okay. I got into heated. I've taken a few film classes actually in college. In 2023, I already said that. That was 19 million. That was the bump. 2024, it kind of stayed the same, about 20 million. Oppenheimer won. See, now Oppenheimer was not about a message of leftist ideology or anything as much as the creation of the bomb. And I think everybody agrees with Oppenheimer, the famous quote, you know, I have created death, or death is the pot. You know, it's an Indian quote, he said. And that's kind of, it's a powerful movie from the perspective of what I read. I just don't like those. I'm a history guy and I read a lot, but I'm not into the portrayal, especially when I read that 70% of the movie was made up. It's like if one person said, you really can't make a movie about scientists in the lab creating a bomb. So you got to kind of create stories around that. And that's what they did with Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
So when I read that, I was like, I don't even want to see it from that perspective. I'm not into real life films much of the time, unless they have a good angle I can look at it. And I'd read enough about the A-bomb. Okay. And I guess what I'm trying to say is everybody's enjoyed it that I've talked to. I just have no desire to see it. Is what I'm trying to say. So 2025, the 97th Oscars, 18 million. So it looks like over the last 3 years, it's plateauing. But it's a major pickup from the 2021, you know, of 10 million low. And Anora won. And 18.07 million saw it. Somebody was trying to say 9.8 million. That's why it's in my notes. Let me double check that. And what happened is that they were just lying. You always got to follow. If you see some of my resources are from X, I have followed up on that X post and dug research. Yeah. I just always like to get credited in my notes to where I first saw it. you know. But yeah, I did see 9.8 million. Let me double check that. That's when I found, no, it's 18.07 million. Real quick, Annette. Before, okay, so actually my first question to you. Ratings have been sliding for years. Mm-hmm. Down from 19.5 million in 2024 and way below the 1980s, 49 million. Is this because the Oscars feel more like a lecture hall than a celebration of entertainment?
Yeah, unfortunately, that's what we've come to see more and more. And it was the same thing actually last night where they made sure that the people who won had their chance to make a political statement. Even the people who won for Nora made sure to thank and to say they thanked and honored sex workers. So, I mean, yeah, no, true. It's all true.
Yeah, I saw it. I'm sorry. I did watch some clips. So okay, I saw that one.
So, yeah. And for the wind, that talked about, you know, Israel, and that was tough for a lot of people to take, and everyone, and not everyone, but the people get up there and they make their, Daryl Hannah got up there and talked about Ukraine, basically, you know, celebrating Ukraine. So I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm not saying, that's the thing. I'm not, we're not talking about whether or not we agree or not with their political statements or sentiments. We're talking about they use that as their platform instead of talking about whether or not it's a great movie. It has integrity as a movie. It has a good storyline. It's well written. There's a good screenplay. The cinematography is beautiful. It's entertaining. I mean, all the things that can make a movie great, and I love the movies. That is why I go. Even if it is maybe a sad or not a happy ending, that's okay with me. If it's a good film, if it's well done, I will watch it and enjoy it. So I think when it comes to the artistry, that night, people who appreciate movies like myself and who will still go to the movies and watch, tune into the Oscars, don't really want to hear about the politics.
I agree. So before I give you my point and my run-in with my college professor on that, let me follow up here. So is Hollywood – it seems like they're doubling down on these progressive themes, these ratings. It's like they don't care. I just had Hody John. He's a Big John's co-host on his libertarian show. Mm-hmm. And I told him, I said, look, what's killing these games is, sure, they may be woke, but the ones that aren't, when you have the game creators coming out and bad-mouthing and calling conservatives names, we are the bulk of the bind. So when the game bombs, to me, it's like you have no respect for the corporation that's giving all these hundreds of millions to put these games on, and you're mm-hmm. undercutting them. And then you whine when nobody buys the game. It seems Hollywood's the same way. They love the crap on the corporate media, corporate this, corporate that. And what they don't understand is, well, if you stop talking about it, maybe part of the reason I don't even pay attention to these movies, when they tend to be woke, they tend to be artsy-fartsy. and it's like, I'm not going to give it a shot. Because there was a time when I was younger. Actually, it wasn't me. It was all of America. When the Oscar winner of the best movie, they would re-release it. You know, do a re-release immediately after the Oscars, and boom, it would jack up in money. Got to go see it, man. It won the Oscar. Mm-hmm. Now we know, oh, it won the Oscar for Feelings, Only About My Feelings. You know, right. So do you think them doubling down, we're suffering woke fatigue?
I mean, I do. And it's interesting because I think a lot of those movies get nominated. Often, if you look, you just read a bunch of winners. Coda's really not that kind of a movie. It's really about a girl leaving home to go to college and find her dream. I mean, Oppenheimer.
So you're saying, hold on, the girl finding her dreams, it's about feelings.
Feelings, yeah, but it was a good story. It really was. It was about feelings. But Oppenheimer, a lot of the movies that are woke get nominated, for sure. You know, they get up there. They get up there in the top, used to be 5, now it's 10, whatever. But they don't win often, William, if you take a look at history. Often the movie that rises to the top is usually, in my opinion, a pretty good movie. Not always, but most of the time I enjoy it. Not Anora. That's not one of my, although it's funny, they try to have one message out there, and I think the movie ends on a different message. I would just say the point is, they drink their own Kool-Aid, though, right? I mean, they're like in an echo chamber in Hollywood. They are, though. I'm not sure they even care.
This is the Hollywood's social circles, because that's what the Oscars is. I mean, this girl about going to college, Van Wilder probably made more money, you know? And that was about a guy going to college, a freshman. I'm being sarcastic. It was a raunchy comedy with Ryan Reynolds, one of his first films. Made a lot of money, you know, probably more than this one. So yeah. And my point in making that sarcastic comment, and I got in a heated argument with my professor, and mm-hmm. I actually requested a meeting with the dean because she made a threat towards me because she didn't like my comment. You know, I didn't care for Bullets Over Broadway, and I'm a Woody Allen fan.
He is my favorite director of all time.
Okay, so, I mean, he's not mine, but I've enjoyed his movies, and I admire him because all his movies are profitable because he has a very small budget, and everybody is willing to take a pay cut to work with him. So smart for business, et cetera, et cetera. I told her I was giving her the reasons as to why, based off the book and what we had to read. Right. She was pissed because I was mm-hmm. the only one, but I had left the military. I wasn't your traditional college kid. I was a little older. So I'm arguing with her. And then she goes, then we got on the topic of why films are there. And her whole point is, you know, you have to push the imagination. You have to push the intellectual thinking, this or that. And I said, I can't even remember her name. I go, no, you're wrong. I go, look at any history book. These were the studios flourished in the Depression era because people wanted to get away from the drudgery of their life. That's documented history. I go, the artsy-fartsy stuff, the film noir stuff all came later. That has nothing to do. And that's when she threatened me. You need to watch your tone. Watch your out. So then I requested a meeting with the professor, the dean. I got an A in the class. The meeting never happened. But I always knew these teachers – my whole point with her is she didn't care why you're supposed to create a movie. Don't get me wrong. Casablanca is a masterpiece. It's a film noir. It's what you would call artsy fartsy, you know, but in a different way, more masculine than what artsy fartsy probably implies. But it's not your traditional type movie, you know, so there is room for that. And my whole point with the Van Wilder versus what was the one with the college girl?
Coda
is local is more popular, you know, is my point. But that said,
though, and you bring up Woody, and I have to say, he addresses that very topic, that very idea, in one of his films. And the film is Crimes and Misdemeanors. Oh, and the guy is getting depressed, and he goes to see a film, which entertains him. And he says, what if the worst is true? That there's nothing, and we all die, and there's nothing.
No, it's Crimes and Misdemeanors about the murder, and eventually life just goes on.
But at the time, his character in that movie, yes, Crimes and Misdemeanors, that is the premise is really about the murder. But his character in it is looking at that professor who he really believed was talking about what mattered in life, and the professor jumps out of the building.
No, you're right. I don't really remember it. It's my favorite Woody Allen film, but I don't remember it.
I know his, like, details of his films. I've seen them all probably 100 times, but I love his films that much. But anyway, he goes and sees this sort of, like, comedy of the Marx Brothers and says, you know what, if the worst is true, here we have this wonderful thing on screen and they're having a good time and it's taking me out of myself for a few moments, right?
Exactly.
That's the point. I think he's saying that is the point, or was the point of film, that escapism.
Yep, exactly. And to her, it was more about the director, the actor. I'm like, no, y'all are just earning a salary. You may want to put art up there, but if your art doesn't sell, then you're putting garbage up there because the only one who's going to appreciate it is you because nobody else is going to see it. You know, and the Crimes and Misdemeanors, what I got out of it was over time, you can normalize and look at things differently as time passes because they were so scared of getting caught for that murder.
He was.
And I said, that's human nature. That is human nature right there.
It's chilling because he learned to live with it. And then all of a sudden, time passed. He wasn't the one who was going to be implicated in the crime. And he was okay. Isn't that crazy? Isn't that a chilling thought?
That's human nature.
It was his play, though. On Dostoevsky's Crime and Punishment, because in Crime and Punishment, the book by Dostoevsky, he feels remorse for his murder, he feels guilt, and he turns himself in.
Right, that's only in the book and not in real life.
Well, okay, that's true, but that's where Woody Allen had the idea.
Yeah, see, and to me, I don't know what the message I got, and I told him, but that's human nature. Over time, you kill somebody, you're going to be able to live with it over time. Now, it also depends on the action. So, for example, a woman who's had an abortion, boy, there's some tales of these women you'll hear that'll make you cry because of the regret, and they never forget it. So it always depends. But in that movie, in that scenario, the murder, I was like, yeah, that's human nature. Yeah. Okay, so before there used to be the Titanic at 43.7 million. You know, in terms of viewers, it was a big blockbuster. You know, everybody loved it. It's like now it's like we don't care about you, Titanic. We don't care about you, James Cameron. And we never cared about Stallone or Rambo. Rocky. Rocky was your little one, but then you became a national hero. Sly. We don't like that. You know, it seems like they don't even consider. It's like somebody once sat there and said maybe they should have an action category, best movie, to honor all these movies that make hundreds of millions. But Hollywood doesn't care for in the artsy-fartsy way. And I get it. You know, Commando made a lot of money. But after a while, you're like, dude, how many ways can you kill somebody on film? 50, 60? Became a running joke, you know? But Titanic is different. It was a great one. But they don't seem to do that anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I guess could you say this year that was like the Wicked, you know, that was the one that made a lot of money and had, it wasn't an action film, obviously, but it has sort of a bigger audience than a lot of the other films. Would you think that that would be?
No, and here's why. Wicked is an offshoot of something that was already a blockbuster. It was a brand and they brought it to the screen.
Yeah.
And even then it was sending a message. It could have been much bigger than it became. You know, to me they hurt part of their sales, part of the audience, because they were sending the leftist message out as well. Wicked, but in defense of Wicked, I mean, we've seen brands, you know, we've seen Cats try to make it on screen and bomb, and we've seen Miserables with mixed
reviews
and all that. So Wicked did overcome that, but at the end of the day, you know, no, because it was already a brand, you know.
I mean, here's the thing. If you really are a film lover the way I am, I think that, I'm not saying that the action films don't, maybe they should have their own category, something I never thought of before. I do really appreciate, though, like a really well-acted film that actually has a compelling story. The only problem for me with action movies when I'm just watching them, and Bill loves them, so I mean, I watch plenty of them with him, is that the action supersedes story. So the story is like a secondary, you know what I mean? The action.
Oh, yeah. I mean, are you trying to tell me you did not shed a tear when Arnold Schwarzenegger's T-800 melted in the molten lava there, and Edward Furlong was like crying about it? That didn't get you in the heart?
It does. It's good. But here's the thing, William, though, and this is for someone like me, again, who loves, those stories are more simplistic, and I love the complexity of characters in a film that represent, you know, people's inner workings, their demons, their goodness, all of the richness of human life. And I like movies that can portray that really well.
No, you're right. And for every 100 action films, you get 2 or 3 who get that sorrowful feeling, because it's tough in an action film, because you're trying to do something. It's like, for example, Bruce Willis in Die Hard, the first one. He has this silly action scene. Hey, Bob, can you tell my wife I love her? You know, it's like, Bruce, you're not pulling it off. A big old interview about how he practiced that, how he wanted to make it so tender. I'm like, didn't work. You're not that kind of actor. You know? So most of the time those scenes come, and they are realistic, and they do make you like, oh, my God. And it's usually done well, where it builds up to the next half hour of the movie. They're killing every bad guy. You're like, yeah. But it's a rarity, and I grant you that. You know, but you go to action films for what movies were made for, to be entertained.
Yes. You know? I do appreciate that.
And I appreciate a good film that kind of jerks you around with your feelings and makes you think about life. You know, my issue is they want you to do that with values I don't care for. I don't care if you're transgender, but I don't – a movie about a 5-year-old who's fighting because he feels he's transgender is not going to move me. To me, that's nothing but propaganda, you know? So you got to find something that the masses can relate to.
That is authentic storytelling, but, you know, it's something else that – well, we'll get there about Gene Hackman, so go ahead.
All right, exactly. All right, let's move on to some money. Some money, 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 money. My problem. Now, I looked it up. I only focused on this year, but throughout the last 10 years, a few of them have made some big money. You know, Wicked made some big money, you know. But in general, this is what we get. Emilia Perez. And you know what? I haven't seen it, but I'm
looking I didn't see that one, so I'm not gonna
You should, because it's going to touch your heart how an ex-mob boss becomes a transgender.
What?
He's an ex-cartel leader who wants to become a woman, you know? In real life, the cartel would have taken him out of the sheer embarrassment.
The point being,
it was just so unrealistic, the storyline. And they gave Zoe, whatever her name is, I think the best supporting actress.
Because
she was the only thing that was left of the movie after the lead actor's social media post came out that they could reward.
And then they got it.
Have you seen the song? Go look at the song. It's like, who wrote this? A frat guy after chugging a keg of beer? That's how pathetic it was. See, that does nothing but validate every conservative belief of the Oscars is trash. That movie was trash. That song was trash. The acting was, I don't know about the acting, so I'm not going to say it was trash, but the whole concept of the movie was garbage. And yet here it was, 13 nominations, and it was going to win a lot.
Until that's right. Until she got, he or she got canceled.
Oh, it's a she. I think he has completely transitioned, so it's a she.
So the trans person played in the role?
The person who played Emilia is an actual trans, was a guy who actually transitioned.
I didn't know that.
But when her post came out, because she's not a George Floyd fan, and I'm not neither. I always tell my friends are black. Yeah, y'all, there's plenty of people y'all can use as role models. Ben Carson, you know, people like that. But y'all demonize them. You know, who's the guy who owned Godfather Pizza or worked as CEO? He passed away because of COVID. You know, he's another one. But they condemn those people because they don't like people who teach you, you know, you can be strong and be unto yourself and build yourself up if you work hard. They don't like that. So instead, they monumentalize George Floyd, a drug addict, you know, a lowlife, you know, because of an incident. You know, so he did not like George Floyd, and he was saying some comments about it. So they despair. So they did not win. But my point is this.
They eat their own.
Yes. Production costs $26 million. Box office revenue, $15 million. To break even, it needed $78 million. 13 nominations. It didn't even make back its money. It's a money loser. Nobody saw it. You know, The Brutalist, you were talking about this. Look, I looked it up. I'm just tired. You know what? I saw in college some of the films. There was not a tear left. Not movies, actual films that the GIs took. The piles of dead Jews, brutally naked, how emancipated they were. How scared. So I can't watch a movie without thinking that. I'm like, I don't want to get depressed. I'll be honest. Every guy was glad the auditorium we're watching that in was dark, because you know you couldn't help but see the face of vile, evil brutality put on another human for no reason except who they were, you know.
Yeah.
And so I have no desire to see The Brutalist. I'm like, I saw real film on that, you know. But 10 nominations, $10 million is what it costs. It only made $36 million. It needed $30 million to make a profit. So there's a $6 million profit in there. So God bless it. It made its money, but nobody saw it. You know, so Wicked was a big hit. 10 nominations, $150 million it cost. It needed $450 million to break even. Approximately $500 million. It made $728 million. So it made a nice little profit. But that type of movie, they expect a bigger. When you put that much into a movie, you expect a bigger pot. So it could have done better, I think, if not for the woke messaging by the actors and actresses as they pushed and promoted the film. But it made money. The Conclave. Now, I'm sorry. I'm going to give you all a spoiler alert. Turn down the volume from 10 to 1. It's about pushing an intersex Pope. And I'm like, go screw yourself. Y'all aren't talking about Islam that way. Heaven forbid you sit there and talk about Islam that way, you know, but you're going to sit there and crap on the Catholics that way. And I'm not a happy Catholic. I grew up Catholic, but I have my issues with this Pope. But to me, it's disrespectful. So your thoughts?
I have to tell you this one because I can't not resist giving me an opportunity to talk about it, William, is that I watched that movie not knowing. And I was looking forward to watching it because I'm like, wow, as it was going on, it was interesting to see the politics of picking out a pope, right? Even people that are religious and holy are not above, you know, maybe wanting power and, you know what I mean, disparaging someone so they can try to get all of this. And then it ended. It ends sort of abruptly and you figure out what's going on. And I was furious. I wanted to throw something at the TV. I didn't know it was coming. My reaction was, I was like, oh my God.
You're flabbergasted.
I was speechless. I still am. I'm still so angry that they played me like that. I felt played at the end of it. I'm like, how dare you? And then the very last second introduce this idea that is, it was just disgusting. It was a disgrace. I was furious. What a joke. I have no words. I know it was a book, right? I think it was a book.
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, because someone said that it was the same in the book. It sort of like rushes through it and then says it at the end. I was like.
You know, they always crap on Christians. This is what pisses me off. Now, I wanted to see it because I saw the previews on Netflix. I go, this looks pretty interesting. Then I saw an article headline like another woke attacking the Catholic Christian. So I'm like, I'm going to read the article. And then it was like, I'm like, no.
You don't know. And it's quite good until that moment when they destroy the entire film with their nonsense.
We just saw a movie like that where we were like, oh, what was that movie called? It's on streaming. And we loved it until the ending. We're like, and it wasn't like the ending was terrible. It was like, when you have a deflating ending to a great story, it completely changes. So, Anora, what was Anora about?
It's about a stripper.
Oh, that's right. That's the one. Oh, yeah. So, Annette. Yeah, you know, I honor the sex worker, you know. Annette. Your daughters, they're working hard, but they need a little help there. I think you and Bill need to sit down and talk to them. You know, the sex worker industry is striving for women. How about spreading your legs and being a whore? I've always aspired for you to be that. Hollywood talks about it in that, well, not me being dirty and instead of being mean and talking about it, but in essence, my whole point is, you know, don't condemn the sex worker. Don't do this. Don't do that. Yeah, da, da, da. Are you going to sit there and ever, would you in any scenario, honey, you know, sex workers down the street is hiring. I think you should go down there. What mother is going to have that conversation?
I literally had this conversation with Bill. No, because, you know, lawyer, nurse, sex worker, you know what I mean? I don't know. Or teacher or anything where, and especially in our family that I talk to the girls a lot about what I think would be, you know, how important it is in your life to do things you think that are edifying, that help you to grow and help you to do something meaningful in the world and to give something to the world. So I guess they're giving something. I don't know. The reason why that story gets turned on its head at the end. And she's a sex worker. She goes for this guy, wealthy guy, gets married, doesn't work out, doesn't go the way she thinks it's going to go, and ends up going back to sex worker. But she is devastated. So basically, she's devastated to be a sex worker. And what she really wanted was the dream. Prince, you know, Prince Charming, take me on your wife, you know, happily ever after, all of that. So I think they thought it was going to be, I hope it's not the glorification of sex work, but I think they might have got something. I don't know exactly what they thought, but in the end, it actually speaks volumes about that she wanted the dream of finding her true love. And then when it didn't happen, she had to go back to the despairing life of being a sex worker. So it was actually really sad. It's super depressing.
I am a libertarian in this sense.
Yeah.
They need to legalize it, but not because I admire sex workers. A woman, if that's what she wants to do, that's what she wants to do. But there's a preface. I preface that with, I have read stories of, I was a stripper in college, and it paid all my whole way through college. And now I'm a nurse, and now I'm this. I'm not that I condone it, but I'm like, hey, I get it. But I have, but here's the real story of what happened. You go to any third world, any half good looking woman, or most women, they're selling themselves to earn a buck. They're living. Then there's the sex trafficking. Then there's this. Then there's just that. The only time I've ever seen the sex worker trade done in a proper way was a 1980s movie called Night Shift with Michael Keaton, his first big role, and Henry Winkler,
the Fonz. I was going to say the Fonz. That movie is hilarious.
Yes.
And Shelley Duvall.
Yes, and yes, Shelley Duvall. Rest in peace, Shelley. I think she's passed away.
So that movie is hilarious.
Michael Keaton or Henry Winkler's character, I can't remember which one, kind of like made him a business, got him investing their money. And I'm like, that's the perfect scenario. And that was a comedy. But that's an unrealistic scenario in today's setup. Could it eventually happen? Yes. But at the end of the day, it's a seedy industry. It's not so nice people. Exactly. So when she goes, I learned so much from you sex workers. Really? What'd you learn? What position did you learn?
She's still committed to them or something? What did she say? Not that she was committed to them, but she would be supportive of them. I don't even know in what way will she be supportive of that. I just think, what I think we need to do? I mean, I'm sure someone out there is doing it. No one's actually saying, like, why is that even such a thriving industry?
No. See, you look at humanity in a very suburban, leave it the beaver way. The reason it's popular is because it's supply and demand. There's a market for it.
Then there's a problem with men. That's the problem.
Is it a problem with men as much as human nature? This has been going on since the dawn of time, Annette.
Wait, I get that, William, but these people don't think anybody can find anyone to have sex with. That's not that hard of a thing to do.
I don't know. And the reason I say I don't know, it's a thriving industry. So for some reason, so in Panama, I was a dumb idiot kid, beer in one hand.
When you were a sailor?
Yes. And I knew because I spoke Spanish, I was a golden ticket to the States because that's where most of my time was spent in Central and South America. Right. And I was an interpreter. And it ranged from, I would be an interpreter too for like the admirals and all that at seminars and things like that. And I wasn't even the best interpreter. I just knew how to carry myself. And I knew how to dress properly. I knew this or that, yada, yada, yada. And I took advantage of that. I was a golden ticket, So men aren't saints, but there's also men who struggle. It's easier. Hey, here's a couple bucks, and that's it. They don't know how to have a relationship. And it's going to get worse in today's Tinder era,
Now they can all have relationships with robots.
Yes, and empowered women sometimes need to find balance with men. Men need to understand, hey, she's a strong woman. You got to learn how to deal with her. But some strong women, certain terms come to mind. So there's got to be balance in how we get along in America. And I'm serious. At one point, the divorce rate was 50%.
Not anymore. It's gotten better.
Yeah. But yet, less people are being married. So I'll take that for what it
is. Oh, no, actually, I forgot about that. That's true. I saw that.
Anyway,
I think it's like the Cinderella story turned on its head, and in the end, they made actually a very powerful statement about true love.
Exactly. But I'll be honest, out of all those movies, there's not one of them I have any desire to see. And most of America feels that way.
We didn't get to a complete unknown.
Oh, that's right, the complete unknown. Where's that at in my notes? I have that. Oh, there we go. The nomination, 8 nominations, 50 to 70. Production costs were between 50 to 70 million. Let's say 60 million. It made 110 million. It needed to make 180 million to break even. So it was another bomb.
It did not break even.
There's a formula that's an exponential by three. So if a movie costs $10, it needs to make $30 to break even. If it costs $10 to make, it needs to make $30 to break even. So it costs roughly $60 million, so it needed $180 million to break even. It only made $110 million. Now, a movie like that may make its money back because somebody, Netflix or somebody, will pay $10, $20 million to have it stream over time. A movie like that will eventually break even. But when you start putting $150, $200 million, when you start putting that type of money, you're not going to be happy with a $10, $20 million profit. That's too much of a risk. Meaning, boy, we barely made it, you know? Yeah. A great example is the trilogy, that the last trilogy of the Star Wars. It needed to make $1 billion to break even. It made $1 billion, but commercially, that's still a failure because there was not much profit. Brad Pitt's movies had traditionally done well, but they had not made a lot of profit. Woody Allen's films have always made a nice profit because he only, if I remember correctly, if you're an actor working on a Woody Allen movie, you're only making $750 or some number like that because he doesn't care who you are. This is my movie, this is how much I'm going to pay you. And he became such an esteemed director, people wanted to work, you know, for him.
And were willing to get your salaries, right. They would.
Exactly.
Getting to the complete unknown, which if I were to be the one to decide the best movie of the year, that would have been my pick out of every single one that I saw. And I saw most of them. I had not seen Emilio Perez. That was a phenomenal film. No. It was.
I'm happy to Emilio Perez.
No. Did I say it wrong?
No. It's just when I think of that, I'm like, how could that movie ever fail?
That was a phenomenal film about artistry, about that time in the 60s.
Okay, what was it about? What was it about, the story?
About Bob Dylan.
Oh, yeah. You know, I don't think Bob Dylan's a great singer.
Wait a minute. He's a terrible singer. That isn't the point. His lyrics are incredible. They're poetry. Have you ever just read them out loud to yourself? Anyway, it is a fantastic movie. It's about what comes from within when you're an artist and you're putting it out there in the most authentic way. He really wasn't. He never tried to be anybody or have like really a persona. He was really inspired by what was inside of him. I don't even know if you need to watch a 60 Minutes interview Bob Dylan's because he's really an enigma. He's fascinating person, I think. But beyond that, this movie was phenomenal. It was like him and Joan Baez. Their chemistry was magnificent. The music was magnificent. It talks about Woody Guthrie. It talks about that time in musical history. That is so, it's art, you know? It's outstanding. It was an outstanding film. I've seen it 3 times.
No, it's not. I mean, to each their own. I just think he's a terrible singer. He's a hippie. He won a revolution with no answers. He was a chaos creator, and he was a terrible singer. I mean, the guy had a raunchy. I mean, he had a nasty ass voice. It's like Bruce Springsteen. I mean, all I hear is a frog. Born. That's Bruce Springsteen. Born in the U.S. It's like you were the great white joke because the white people needed somebody to prop up there with Michael Jackson and Prince, who are true artists, you know? When I hear a singer, I want him to move my soul. And Bruce Springsteen nor Bob Dylan move my soul.
What about the lyrics? How many rows must a man walk down before you can call him a man? I mean, what about...
In my defense, because he was such a terrible singer, I never cared to hear his songs, so I never learned his lyrics. So he may have a powerful story, but his singing was so bad, I never got a chance to hear the words.
Okay, the last thing I'll say on A Complete Unknown is so many of his songs other people sang. And so you'd be surprised at his, you know, wide swath of the material that he wrote that either Johnny Cash sang or, you know, tons of other artists sang his music. Obviously, to your point, better than his vocals were able to do, but just, you know, Peter, Paul, and Mary, fantastic songs.
No, yeah, I agree. In fact, there's a Bruce Springsteen song that became a bigger hit when somebody else sang it. Oh, I can't. It's at the tip of my tongue. But Dolly Parton with that Whitney Houston song. Dolly Parton had made a nice little chunk of change.
Yes, she did. Yes.
Another level.
Mega hit. Yes.
And, you know, they asked her about that, and she said, oh, God bless that girl. I'm cashing those checks.
That's so funny.
Dolly Parton said that, yeah. Okay. Now, before we leave, the Oscars. Let's talk about the sexuality of today, how we were just talking about it. I want to get your opinions on some of what I consider to me, the Oscars are good for one thing. The Oscars, and when France does all their shows and New York does all their fashion shows, these are outfits nobody will ever wear, ever, ever, ever wear, you know? So let's go to ugly outfit. Okay, I'm going to preface this with, I think they're all ugly. You may think, if you think they're beautiful, I want you to push back and tell me why.
Okay. Right. I might agree with you, though.
I'm pretty sure you will.
I mean, there was some that were elegant. No. Halle Berry, come on, and she's such a beautiful woman. Okay. Garbage.
Yeah. Oh, I'm in the garage here. I need something to put on. Oh, look at that. I use that as a car. Put that on my head.
Yeah.
And by the way, I wore this in honor of my favorite film as a kid.
She's so tiny, too, and she looks honestly oddly big, and her legs, it's just, no, not flattering at all.
Oh, no, no. Remember how John was trying? John is crass. He should never have brought up that joke to me as he was talking about. But you see her shape? That's what blacks and Latinos really love. Anglos tend to like slimmer. But as a Latino, I look at her legs and I think they're spectacular. So okay. That's a different taste. You know, so, but as far as the outfit, oh, darling, baby, that's got to go. All right. Yeah. Let me turn on my little gay filter or my gay act here. Let's move on. Look at this one. Look at that sassy girl. Thoughts? Here, hold on. Let me make it close up here.
No, that is.
Oh, you sweet, darling, Eden-looking woman.
No, that's just terrible. That's
Max.
I can't even comment on that. What? Who's that?
Oh, I don't know who these women are. That's the other thing. It's like there was a time when everybody knew who the actresses and the stars were. It's like every Tom, Dick, and Harry, they do one thing, and then they have a social media, and they do more gossip, so they become better known for that than
actually. That's not even addressed to me. It's not even clothing. I don't even
know. It's a see-through. It's a see-through, too. Yeah. You see this right here?
Yes, I do. Oh, it's just inappropriate. That's just classless. What? Was everybody naked last night? I did not see anything.
That was part of the thing. You see right here, her areolas are covered up. But you see that? Yes, it was. In fact, the one who won the best actress, I chose not to show it. When she turned around, you saw half the crack of her ass.
No.
Yes.
I did not see that.
Well, they're not going to show it on TV, but they did it on the red carpet there. All right. Next.
Last. That looks like she's about to go to bed.
Yes, exactly.
That's what you wear when you go to bed.
Here is tape. They probably, I understand the women will tape it down. Yeah. My point is, once you got to go to the tape, you shouldn't be wearing the outfit.
But that's her underwear.
No, that is a French Jacques June, whatever his name is.
That's not appropriate. Again, that's not appropriate. That's like what you're wearing in your bedroom.
And there's one here with granny pants, and they said when they turned around, the granny panties turned into like a thong in the back. And you could see everything. Next. This is obviously taped. Her hair's taped over there, over the areas.
Not taped that well.
Oh, you can't see anything, really. I mean, you can see the outer, but the point is, once you go to having to use tape, you're not trying to look nice and comfortable and beautiful.
No, she's wearing paper, like a trim, And actually, the hair thing is gross.
The what? Oh, yeah. Not only that, look at her lips. What is it with Hollywood women? You know, you're beautiful as it is. Why do you, it's like, you're not beautiful. You know, those lips look like, it's like, you know, it's like. Maybe I have different tastes, you know, but that I view her as her shooting her lips up makes her completely unattractive. But I guess And this one here, it only bugs me, and I want to be tactful when I say this. There's certain outfits some people have the figure for, and there's certain outfits some people don't. And you need to understand that. This is not the type of outfit for her upper area. She needed something much different.
You mean she's too flat-chested?
Yes.
Okay,
so, as a man, and she's not pretty. I mean, she may be pretty, but she's it's like, woman, you ever heard of a brush? You know?
Yeah,
it's
right. Like,
you know, and that, you know, there were tons more. I didn't want, we could spend the whole show on it, but it seemed like Deep Naked. Let me give you women there a little tip. We men were crude, we're pigs. Yes, at 13, we love to see the little naked woman in the movies or whatever and fantasize. But in reality, when you don't show us everything, that's what the fantasy's all about. That's what makes you more desirous. That's what makes you want you more. Now, that said, at the end of the day, the woman you have a relationship with, married, you better be able to talk to her. But when it comes to, you know, going out there, throwing your feathers up in the air, trying to attract a man, there's a line. And none of these women seem to understand that line. It's more like, who can be the most flamboyant? Who can be the one who's going to be talked about the most the next day? You know, in fact, though, she...
Like the most outrageous, right? Just...
Yeah, now this one here was pretty, I thought she was gorgeous. I'm not a fan of her because of her politics, but I thought she was gorgeous in this one. Let me grab it here.
Yeah, we got to end on an elegant, beautiful woman.
Yes, yes, where is this?
There were a lot of them. I thought Monica Barabo looked gorgeous. I like her.
I want to say, here we go. Is this one? Open link in the tab. Hold on 1 second. Oh, yeah, here we go. I just got to find her. I thought she looked gorgeous. I really did. But the downside was, oh, come on. Oh, no, 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 no. I will find it here in a second. But what are your final thoughts on these Oscars?
Well, it was okay. It's just okay. Conan O'Brien actually did a nice job as the host. I thought he was funny. I thought it was odd that if you did see the movie The Substance, we didn't really talk about it very much, but with Demi Moore, that I think she really looked the most disappointed that she didn't win last night. And of course, the younger one won. And it's funny that the whole premise of The Substance is just that very thing. You know, the younger women getting the spot and, you know, older women losing their edge, losing their place. You know what I mean? And it was sort of sad to see Demi Moore's like disappointment. I think she tried to smile through it. So that was, I thought the 007 sort of like sequence they did was sort of boring and I wasn't even paying attention. And I really thought, if I could just say one last thing, I thought they did not do a good job for David Lynch. David Lynch, I might not like all of his films, Williams. Yeah, he died. And they did a really nice job for Gene Hackman and really sort of brushed over David Lynch. And he was not, again, my favorite film director. I appreciated some of his films, but I really appreciated how original he was. I liked Twin Peaks. I liked some of his other sort of strange. He was a genius. He was totally unique. And I think a lot of filmmakers really like – had taken parts of what he did, you know what I mean, and used that, incorporated that in their work. And he didn't get, I think, the acknowledgement that he deserved last night. Because they just...
Fair enough. No, that makes sense. Okay, the final shot here. What do you think?
Okay, final beauty shot. Oh, yeah, I thought, you know what? She did look beautiful last night, Selena Gomez, excuse me. She's a beautiful woman.
Yeah, I there's nothing about her I find attractive as a man, but we all have a different taste. No, I'm not saying that to her.
I think she looks elegant, right?
She's a cute girl. She's this, she's that. But she's when you look at her, she's not what Hollywood really wants to see in a body, so she has to really work at it hard. And and my point being is I tend to recognize that. But this is how, if you're a woman, this is elegance. My point being is she understands who she is, her limits and all that, but she knows how to maximize. She knows how to pop those feathers up to try to attract the man in a way where you're like, wow, that's beautiful.
Right.
So yep. I'm trying to give props in my long-winded way. I thought she looked beautiful. She was making a statement without having to dress like some of these other idiots out there.
That's more like old classic Hollywood.
Yes. It's elegant. It's elegant. Yeah. I think Hollywood is lacking elegance. I look back at the 80s and I'm like, where did we go wrong? Because the 80s, the late 70s and the 80s, like 78, 79 and into the 80s was when nudity started to become every other scene. You know, I'm like, where did we go wrong from the 50s, into the 60s, and all that, the 70s. It's like, it started with hair. I mean, I just said Annette Bening's husband.
Warren Beatty.
Not hair.
Shampoo,
yes. Yes. That's so raunchy and all that. Then you look at it today, you're like, well, what's the big deal about that movie? But that movie kind of like, at the time, began crossing. That to me is where it all began, And as a kid, I'm like, oh, yeah. But now as an adult, I'm like, you don't have to do that. Yeah.
Well, one of the reasons why I really appreciate Warren films, and I know some of them go into that, but a lot of them are actually less explicit than our American films, and I think what you said is true. It leaves a lot more to the imagination, but it's subtle and it's there, and you know where it's going. But you don't need to show me everything. I don't want to feel like a boy. I don't want to feel like I'm looking at your intimate life. That's not interesting to me. I'd rather be suggested instead of just actually overtly shown.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I don't want to get too cruel here, but private parts aren't that attractive, cover it up.
True. No, I totally agree with that. And honestly, watching that is not that, it's not, I think, and maybe this is because I'm a woman, I don't know, but I mean, someone I feel a little ashamed, like that's someone else's intimate life, it's a place I don't think I should be. So I'm good with it for what it can suggest and the mood that it can create, but I'm not really interested in seeing people being naked together. I mean, actually, to the point that it is now, it's just out and out boring. And I think that's honestly why Baby Girl didn't really do that well. I think Baby Girl was supposed to be that very, it didn't win a lot, but Nicole Kidman was like the older woman to this younger guy's fantasy.
Oh, what's the one with Dustin Hoffman? He was the college kid, the graduate.
The graduate, yeah.
It's like the scene, I think it was on the ladder or something, and she's like looking at him or something. I can't remember, but that's imagination,
Yes. That's a great film. Now that's a great film.
Yeah. All right, I know you got to go here, but I don't want to keep you long. Let's talk about Gene Hackman.
Yes.
His name is Eugene Allen Hackman, born January 30th, 1930, February 17th, 2025. He lived 95 years. Now, we knew his days were numbered just because of his age, but it just feels like a loss because of how he passed on. He was born, not quite locally, but in San Bernardino. He served in the military 4.5 years. He was stationed in China because people forget China was an ally during the Second War, and we were allied with them until their government fell in the late 40s. And then he came back. And what made him unique, or what I quickly gravitated as I was researching, was he has a chip on his shoulder. I have a chip on. When people think you can't do it, I don't get all sad, all pissed. I'm like, bleep you. I'm going to prove you wrong. And that was Gene Hackman. Yeah. And where was that? I can't remember. It was an agent told him that, and then like a sergeant told him that or something. And he never forgot that. And he won 2 Academy Awards for The French Connection, playing Jimmy Popeye Doyle.
And Unforgiven, right?
Unforgiven. I thought Unforgiven was not Clint Eastwood's best and all that, but I think because Clint Eastwood was getting so old, they wanted to start honoring his films as an actor, director. But Gene Hackman was great in it. So was Morgan Freeman. They were all great in that movie.
Yes.
And it was kind of tough for me to see it at first because Popeye Doyle, he's the good guy, the working class guy. He played the villain in that one.
Right.
So watching that early on, what are so he won 2 Oscars for that. He was always the type of guy when I saw him in movies, he was a heavyweight hitter, meaning he may not have been him. And we're going to talk about if you have time, but we're going to talk about Michael Caine maybe, but him and Michael Caine are two of the greatest supporting actors who, when they're on a scene, your leading man actor better be a heavyweight or they're going to steal the scene. That's how powerful. That's what they brought to the table. Your thoughts on Gene Hackman?
Well, I mean, he's one of my favorites. I think Hoosiers is one of my favorite movies of all time. He was great as a villain in Lex Luthor. I thought, I mean, it really didn't get as much praise as I think it deserved, but his movie with Anne Margaret, Twice in a Lifetime.
Okay. I did, but I don't remember it.
It's one of my favorite films of his, you know, a working class guy who's like married to Ellen Bernstein. The marriage sort of fizzled and he falls in love again with Anne Margaret and they have this really great chemistry together. And I don't know, I think he was, you know, a middle-aged man at the time. He still carried off like being a leading man, you know, really, really well. He just seems like a person you would want to know. He's like a person you wish you knew. He seems like someone that you do know. So something about him is extremely relatable. And so there wasn't a movie that he was in, even though Lex Luthor and Superman, which, you know, he was, you know, the Superman's bad guy, the bad guy of Superman. He was a great, fun villain in that. And I was really, really, really sad. Asked Bill that day, all day, to hear about his death because I just thought that he was one of the greats. I have enjoyed him for years.
He's a great actor. I got to be honest. I haven't seen The Poseidon Adventure since I was a kid. I didn't even
realize. That's the one I haven't seen. Is that a good one?
Oh, I loved it. Like I said, I felt Shelley Winters took my heart because she's a big woman by that point in her career, and she has a scene in there where she's got to put it out, and you're like, you're just cheering for her, you know? So when the tale that befalls her, you got, oh, not her. You know, I was hoping she'd be one of the ones to make it out, you know? And now they've done the tale over and over the movie, but nothing matches up to Irwin Allen's first-time classic. But I also love them in Hoosiers. If you haven't seen The Hoosiers is just a great American tale. If you strive and work hard, you can achieve greatness. I love them in The Quick and the Dead. It's not what you would call a great movie. It's not a classic. It's entertainment. You know, Shelley, a Basic Instinct woman. Who was that?
Sharon Stone.
Sharon Stone's in it. A young DiCaprio's in it. And Gene Hackman plays his father. It's just one of those, it's a contest where they're having duels. You know, so it's not going to ever be seen as one of his greats, but it's become a cult hit. You know, you see it on television. It's like Roadhouse. It's just become a cult hit.
Yeah, right.
And, I saw the Royal Tenenbaums. I thought, all right, they're giving him more praise.
Me too. That was okay. But he was fine in it.
Movie he was great in was The Birdcage. Nathan, what's his name? Not Fillion. He's the rookie. Nathan, the Broadway actor, Nathan.
Nathan, I know exactly what you're talking about.
And he's actually with Selena Gomez in the series in the first season, the hotel murders that were there.
Murders in the building.
Yeah. He played in the first season. Nathan. But anyway, though, he plays a gay father. Of a straight kid who's marrying, falling in love and marrying Gene Hackman's daughter, and Gene Hackman's a straight, hardcore, a fundamentalist type Republican. You know?
I love it.
So he's a great actor. He retired. He did Welcome to Mooseport. I think it was with Ray Romano. It's a cute little film that wasn't that great. And people were like, man, he went out with a bad flick. And I'm like, nah, because he chose to retire. The doctor said, you got a lot of stress in your life. And he's like, yeah, maybe time to retire. And his death, so regarding his death, they found him and his wife 9 days, approximately 9 days after they died, one of the poor dogs they found dead in the closet. It was in the crate.
So sad.
The other two were out. And his wife was 65. He was 95. And I just wonder,
did the dog starve to death?
Yes, dehydration and starvation.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. It breaks your heart, you know.
And the other dogs, that's why they were fine, because they were out.
Yes. So they were probably able to get water through the toilet, through their bowls, through whatever, you know. So they found the body, and they found her body in a bathroom. They found his, I think, in a sauna or somewhere with a cane in the mud or something like that.
Yeah, in the mud room. Yeah.
And what they suspect
happened. Yeah, now what are they thinking? Have you heard the latest?
They think that she she didn't panic, but she, you know, it's her husband, you know, her loved one. They think she may have went to get the pills, his heart pills or something, and literally like fell or had a heart attack herself. They don't know, but I just find it odd. So I have no clue what happened there, but it's a sad way for such a great artist to pass. But hell, if it's not a way for Gene Hackman to be even remembered for, you know, even deeper with his legacy. Well, not only was he a great actor, did you hear how he died? You know, and I smile when I say that because he was 95. Who I feel bad for is his wife. She was 65. What happened?
She was much younger. Wait, so you're not thinking any more foul play. I know they found there was no carbon monoxide. They did all those testings on the bodies already. They did the testing in the house. So it wasn't some sort of carbon monoxide poisoning. They've ruled that out. However, do you think there was any other kind of foul play?
We don't know. Nobody will ever know. Nobody. I mean, the conspiracy theories are already out there. Gene Hackman was going to expose child trafficking. I'm like, well, first of all, I don't know if that tweet's real. The guy was 95 years old. What was you know, how much energy did he have left to expose
that? A pretty private existence, I heard, in Santa Fe. I don't think that was it. I just thought it was weird that their door was open. But you know what? Maybe that is the very – it'll be interesting when the autopsy comes out, right? Maybe he – I wondered if she found him dead and then she killed herself.
Could be that too, you know, but yeah. And that's true love because you probably assume there he was very well off. And
damn, she should have let the dog out before she did that.
Well, then that would make it seem it was more of an accident.
That's true. That's a good point because the other dogs were running around. That's right. So that would be like happen more spontaneously than that.
Now, I do want to say this about Gene Hackman. He did have a second career. He wrote, I want to say, 4 or 5 books.
Yes, books. Yes.
And he was a painter. So he was happy. In fact, he came out and said, yeah, I don't miss that. I'm happy with my home life. You know, and what that means, he gets up. He paints, reads, sticks around the house. Maybe he goes out every so often. The reason they probably didn't have somebody in the house is they probably still wanted their privacy. And the wife was 65. She could take care of him, you know, so they didn't necessarily need a caregiver. And so it's just kind of sad that he died. And she was a pianist, a classical pianist.
Yep.
And they lived as recluses there, not in a bad way, just as you said, the private life. And so he had a pacemaker.
Right.
So they're hoping to get some information out of that. They're going to look at the phones. But at the end of the day, I view it as
a long full life, 95 years old.
Yes. It's like my dad. He's 92. So it's like he himself has said, you know, I lived a long time. You know, it's not that I want to die, but if my time comes, it's who am I to complain? You know, so and I would imagine he was probably like that based off what I researched in his personality. So we're going to find out a little bit more. Now, I always think that the heavy what determines how much of a heavyweight you are is the people who pay you public tribute. Mm-hmm. Clint Eastwood, there, you know, he's quote, there was no finer actor than Gene, intense and instinctive. Never a false note. He was also a dear friend whom I will miss very much. Well, I'm saying this jokingly. Well, it's not like Clint. You're probably going to see him sooner than later.
Yeah, right. Clint has got to be in his 90s, right?
Yes, he's in his 90s. He's like 92, 93. Francis Ford Coppola. Quote, Gene, and for the record, Clint Eastwood, that's where he won his Oscar in. Clint Eastwood starred and directed in Unforgiven. In fact, if I'm correct, Clint Eastwood may have won an Oscar for that movie as director. Francis Ford Coppola, Gene Hackman was a great actor, inspiring and magnificent in his work and complexity. I mourn his loss and celebrate his existence and contribution, unquote. You know, I'll tell you what Francis Ford Coppola's mourning right now, how much of a bomb Megalopolis was.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Morgan Freeman, Dustin Hoffman. Him and Dustin Hoffman were good friends. There's a quote or a story of him saying he was just thrilled. He took the runaway gig right away when he realized he could finally play in a film with his good friend Dustin Hoffman. Glenn Close, little tidbit on Glenn Close. I just watched Greystoke, The Legend of Tarzan, 1984, Christopher Lambert, and she's his first movie. And there's another actress. It's actually one of the best performing, most closest to the book Tarzan. It's not a lot of action, show Tarzan, but Glenn Close, Minnie Driver, Glenn Close dubbed her voice the whole movie.
Really?
Yeah, you just don't hear of that, you know?
I did not know that.
You know, Tom Hanks, Viola Davis, Bill Murray, Mel Brooks. These are heavyweights.
Yeah.
Except for Alec Baldwin. No, I'm kidding. Gwyneth Paltrow, Josh Brolin. Well, I don't view those. John Cusack is a heavyweight. Nathan Lane, that's the actor.
Yes.
James Woods, who I think is a great actor. I've enjoyed it and everything. Danner Aykroyd is a legend, and Hank Azaria, Michael Chiklis, and Superman co-star Valerie Perrine. So when you brought up Superman, I wasn't a big fan. I thought it was kind of cheesy, but as a prepubescent male, the one scene I laughed and loved at was when Valerie Perrine is in the road, and then Dallas, the Dallas star. He was in I Dream of Jeannie. Oh, what was his name?
I know exactly the guy you're talking about. Yes.
Hagman, Larry Hagman. Wasn't that it? Larry Hagman?
Yeah.
So he had a cameo playing the general or something, and she's there. Step aside, man. I'll handle this one. She's breathing with her bosom all going up and down. As a prepubescent kid, that's the one scene I remember.
Superman?
Huh?
From Superman?
Yeah.
Wow.
No, the other scene is when he first flew. And people, another tidbit, it wasn't a green screen. It was a blue screen at the time. They eventually went to green screens.
Wow.
Yeah. So great actor. I don't want to keep you. I know we've been here an hour 11. So,
I don't know how we do it, William. Every time we get into it, it's awesome. But it's awesome. There's so much to talk about.
Well, any final words before I let you go? Because I still got to finish the show.
You got to finish the show. I would just say that he will be missed. He will be missed. And I like how and I just want to mention one more movie that was his Woody Allen movie. It's one of my favorites that he was in. Another Woman with Jenna Rollins. Did you see that?
No. What's that one about?
It's with Gene Hackman. It is about a philosophy professor in her 50s, and she is really the man that she was truly passionately in love with, but she was very, stoic about showing her feelings, and she comes to this revelation in her life. But Gene Hackman is also in that. Again, he's just, this very understated but phenomenal actor at expressing, you know, really, really deeply held and felt emotions. You know what I'm saying? Without being overly expressive or overly dramatic, you know what? The way that he carried himself in a lot of these films, his understated way of acting, I found to be very compelling.
Right. Actually, I am going to end the show here. To everybody, I will do a clip on Zelensky Voldemort and all the stars that are willing to put a flag up and praise him, but won't give him a damn dime, or won't go over to fight for him. And then I'll do the rude rundown. What I want to say about Gene Hackman before we let go is, all these stars, I've never heard of him for the last 15, 20 Oscars. In their defense, we've become fragmented because of the internet and cable. So back when we were kids, there were only three channels. And then PBS, ABC, CBS, NBC, and PBS. And movies were blockbuster events because you wanted to get out of the house because it was hot summer, cool theater. So I will sit there and say times were different. But Gene Hackman and Megyn Kelly, phenomenal podcast if you guys are looking for a good podcast. And I pride myself saying that because a lot of times when she talks about it, I'm like, I haven't got that schedule to talk about. And one of the guys his name is Chris Toto, I want to say. He's a conservative Hollywood guy. I actually follow him and read his blog. But I think he said it. You know, we felt a loss with him because he was a Democrat. And most people don't know that. But even when they ask him about it, he goes, yeah, I'm a hardcore Democrat and all that, but I love Ronald Reagan. There's something about that guy, you know? So he was able to see both sides. But he's at a loss because all we cared about him was how great an actor he was. All he really wanted to talk about when he was interviewed, his work. You know, what Morgan Freeman said. I don't know if you saw Morgan – well, you saw the show. So Morgan Freeman said something to the effect that helped me out here. he wanted to be remembered as just a guy who did good or something like that, or would be remembered for having done good or something like that. It wasn't about sending an ideological message. It wasn't about he believed in this or that. It was about entertaining us. And that's why I think most everybody feels a loss, you know, because when Alec Baldwin passes on, there's not going to be a lot of people outside his hardcore supporters. Now, he shouldn't care what others think, but these people have big egos in their legacy. So to me, Gene Hackman is truly one of the last Hollywood icons. And what's it say when it's a supporting actor that's still one of the last great Hollywood icons? Hollywood is changing, I believe, and not changing for the best. Any final comments before we close the show out then?
No, I think that that's an excellent wrap up.
Outstanding. All right.
Thank you for letting me talk about something that I really, it's a true, not hobby, but it's a true like passion of mine, films. So thank you for letting me talk about it.
You're welcome. But I also know how to write a script. I know how to review a movie. I took 3 courses in school, college, not because I wanted to take them, but when you're working full time and you got to take certain courses, there were 3 movie films I did. And I love the fact I took the script course, you know, how to create a movie. I learned so much about plotting, how they fill it out. Drives my wife crazy because I can predict what's going to happen. Or, you know, well, we're at this point, babe. We're at this. She's like, shut up. I want to watch the film. Yeah.
Oh, no. That must be brutal for your wife.
She sometimes, to get her point, she just put pause. All right. As they say in Tinseltown, that's a wrap of this episode of the Red, White, and Rude. Hackman's legacy will live on.
Yeah.
The Oscars will sadly live on, but they're dying a slow death with a hit here or there. But is it enough to sustain them? I don't know. We'll find out. So thank you for tuning in to the Red, White, and Rude. But before I go, do not forget again to like and share this podcast, the Red, White, and Rude, and bookmark grumblingsmedia.com. Make sure you hit us up on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, and Pandora, whichever one is your favorite, with your taste. Tell us what you think. What did you think of the Oscars? What did you think of the outfits? What was your favorite movie? Or are you like me? Screw the Oscars. Or are you like Annette and is able to enjoy it no matter how good or bad, or no matter how bad it can be? She finds it in awe. For Annette and myself, William Del Pilar, this is the Red, White, and Rude, and I am signing off. Stay rude and stay real.